Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, VegasScoresAndOdds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of VegasScoresAndOdds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419. Or go to VegasScoresAndOdds.com.
The following program is distributed by the Bears Barroom Radio Network. It's presented live over MixLR.com and later disseminated in podcast format on most delivery platforms. It's intended for all audiences. Never before in the history of sports podcast has one show made this promise. Draft on Tap will report on every college prospect pro scouts are looking at for the 2020 NFL Draft. Every one of them.
Sanders, Smother, Chase Young, another big play.
Montez, second and goal, steps in, touchdown! The third passing touchdown of the first half for Steven Montez. One, there's Johnson! He's got it! Touchdown, Texas! An open man at the 25, a foot race for the tight end. There's that man again, Albert O, with his second score, 47 yards.
Draft on Tap with Bears Barroom draft analyst Denny Shimon, your host Ryan Badgley, and featuring some of the most respected draft analysts in the country. Grab a beer. We're about to make history.
And making history is what we do on Bears Barroom Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Badgley, and welcome to Draft on Tap. We have an exciting show planned for you tonight with the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, joining us live in just a moment. So tie those cleats up tight, and let's introduce our Bears Barroom draft analyst, none other than Danny Shimon. Danny, how are you tonight?
Ryan, how are you, my friend? I'm doing well. Excited. We have another great show for you tonight. Another great guest, as you just mentioned. So let's, you know, without further ado, let's go ahead and kick it over to our guest.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's welcome Jim Nagy to the show. As I mentioned, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, ESPN draft analyst, and an 18-year NFL scout, six-time Super Bowl participant, four-time champion. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Yeah, Danny, Ryan, thanks for having me on, guys.
We appreciate it, Jim. And thanks again for giving us some of your time tonight. Just want to give you a forewarning here. I mean, I can talk to you for hours, but I know we have a time limit, so I'll keep it short here. But just kicking it off here real quick, you know, having almost made it halfway through the college football season, you know, what would you say, you know, whether team or individual, has surprised you the most?
Gosh, that's a great question. Surprised. I'd say the most improved player is Joe Burrow at LSU, and I'm excited to see him. I'm going to the game in Death Valley here on Saturday, making the short drive over to Baton Rouge. It's only a couple hours. You know, I saw Joe throw at the Manning camp this summer, and, you know, like looking at him in the spring, and I saw him play against Auburn last fall. I thought he was kind of a, you know, a third, fourth round type guy, and he's made a big jump. He really has made a big jump, and I love the dude. I'll say this for the Chicago listeners, and I'm not even joking. Like growing up in Michigan as a kid, I was a huge Lions fan, but I loved Jim McMahon. He was my guy. I played quarterback. Like I kind of patterned myself after him, you know, headbutting Jimbo Covert and Jay Hilgenberg and all those dudes. So like, Joe plays the position like that. So he really reminds me of Jim McMahon. Love like the swag that he plays with and the, you know, what he brings to the field. So, more than not really surprised, but to me, Joe Burrow is the most improved player in the country.
Do you think he has possibly gotten himself elevated to a point where he could be first round territory?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, everyone's had, you know, Justin Herbert pegged as a top 10 guy, and Tua pegged as a top 10 guy. But I think when it's all said and done, come April, there's going to be some other names in that conversation, and I would expect Joe to be one of those.
Another quarterback that I really was intrigued by coming into the season, namely because of the school he transferred to and who his coach was, is Jalen Hurts. And I had him in my preseason top 10 in terms of quarterbacks to watch. And really, I mean, he's done nothing but open eyes, in my opinion. I mean, I know he was a great athlete, and when he was recruited to Alabama. I think he's shown us this year that he can be a passer, and he does now have, in my opinion, an NFL future.
Yeah, he's made a huge jump. He's been a really incredible story. He's an Alabama guy, so being down here in Mobile, he's been the talk of the state for a few years now. He's done some great things here in Tuscaloosa, but I said publicly last year when I took this job that people were asking me about Jalen, and I was being honest. Like, if we were to bring him to the Senior Bowl a year ago, it would have been as a running back. And the work he put in with Dan Enos last year, I'll give Dan some credit, who's now at Miami now, and then give Jalen most of the credit. He's worked at it the most. Where he's come as a passer in the last 18 months has been incredible. So we're really excited about Jalen. We're, as a staff, we haven't seen him play live yet. We're going to have a scout at the game at the Red River Rivalry on Saturday. And we'd love to have him in Mobile. Like, he's really positioned himself, at a really cool spot in the draft, and a guy that can definitely play quarterback at the next level now. And now it's like, at what point? Like, how high do you have to take him? So he's really made a big jump.
Sticking on that whole Oklahoma theme here, would it shock you if by this time next year, Oklahoma head coach is not actually in the NFL coaching, Lincoln Riley?
I don't know if it'd shock me. Honestly, my advice would be to stay in college football. I mean, right. I know the lure of the NFL, and money always talks. I get that part of it too. In college football, I mean, nowadays can pretty much match dollar for dollar. But, just the stability of college football, I mean, every time they line up at Oklahoma, I mean, they're really only in, like, they really got like two or three games a year to get up for. And in the NFL, the volatility of it, we saw last year in Arizona. I mean, you'd be a head coach for a year and lose your job. So I love the NFL. I was in that league for a long time and have a lot of friends that are still coaching and playing in the league. But if you're at one of those premier jobs in college football, or whether you're Dabo Sweeney or Nick Saban or Lincoln, like, I would never leave that job. So, would it shock me if he's in the NFL? It actually would kind of shock me, because if I were him, I'd never leave.
Jim, we've got a question in the chat for you already. Every week, the Twitter handle for the Senior Bowl features video of prospects warming up prior to the game. Can you tell us a little bit more about, how that started and where the idea came from and whatnot?
Yeah. So it's something we did, started to do a little differently last year. We never really had a scouting staff per se before last season. And I thought it was a good thing for football's it's a really unique profession. Like, you can be as good at in most walks of life, if you're really good at your job, you're never going to lose your job. There's really good security. If you're, a school teacher or a dentist or, whatever, what have you. But football's unique. Like, you end up in a certain situation and the quarterback throws a bunch of picks one year and you lose enough games, you're going to lose your job. You're going to get caught in the crosshairs. So there's a lot of good scouts that end up out of work, on a yearly basis. So when I took the Senior Bowl job in June of 18, I just thought, we've never done this before. Why don't we get a bunch of guys that I can trust, that I know I've been on the road with, that I know what they're looking at. They're really good evaluators. And they got let go for – not because of anything they've done, but because something, organizationally. So we don't have an NFL budget here at the Senior Bowl. We're not a billion-dollar corporation. So these guys are all under contract with their teams for another year. And obviously we're giving them something to supplement their income and make it worth their while. So last year we hired four guys and then we spread them across the country. We were really lucky. Like, the geographic spread was really good. And three of the four went back, got jobs back in the NFL. One guy went to Canada, got a job in the CFL. And this year we hired six more. Wow. So that's kind of the model is going moving forward is like getting people with NFL experience, you know, to come scout for the Senior Bowl and then, you know, get back in. Like we've got a guy tonight at the NC State Syracuse game who was with the Jets the last you know few years, and I've known him for a long, long time. We got it in the league around the same time, around you know in the late '90s, and so he's there tonight. And so the video thing really started was really we were trying to pull back the curtain, right?
Sure.
So I was just trying, like being completely honest. I was just like trying to pull the curtain back for all the fans, you know, that might be interested in the Senior Bowl, and like let them know who we're interested in, you know, through the process, like who we're looking at. And what happened was, and it was kind of just circumstance. I was driving home from a Mississippi State Florida game last year around week three, and Montez Sweat, who at the time was, you know, everyone's projected Montez as a number, you know, first round draft pick. He followed me. He retweeted our post, and I thought, I'm like, oh my gosh, we got these players, you know, like these guys are seeing it. So what it really turned into was a really cool recruiting tool for us. You know, I've got a 14-year-old son and he's on his phone way more than I want him to be. So like, I get it that teenagers are on their phones nowadays.
Sure.
But it's been a great way to connect with these players. You know, it really has. So, you know, we've got scouts some weeks where, you know, 10 to 12 games on a weekend. And what those on-field videos do, you know, what we're trying to capture is one, athleticism, you know, watch these guys move around a little bit. And two, like we try to get our guys to get as up close as you can to these guys so you can body type them. So like when you're a scout, if you're a general manager, you're not getting out to a lot of games. So what are the missing components for you as a general manager sitting at your desk and, you know, you're kind of beholden to being with your team all year is the body type part. That's a big part of the evaluation. So, and I've had GMs call and be like, we love your videos. You know, I love getting your videos every week because I get a real sense for what these guys are built like.
Sure.
So that's a big part of it too. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring the fans down to field level so they get a, you know, get a look at these guys move around and kind of what they look like physically, you know, really up close. And it's, you know, it started off, like I said, as a pull back the curtain thing for the fans. And it's been an awesome thing, awesome recruiting tool for us with the players.
Speaking of the Syracuse NC State game that one of your scouts is at, Jim, who are they there specifically looking at, or just there to grab some footage?
Yeah, Alton Robinson is a guy. Sure. You know, he's a defensive end from Syracuse.
Yep.
He had 10 sacks last year. You know, looking at him over the summer, you know, solidly like second, third round guy. You know, right now he's sitting at 2 sacks, kind of midway through the year, so the production's not quite there yet. But really talented edge rusher. You know, Kendall Coleman on the opposite side, the bookend. He's a talented guy. And then you flip to the NC State side, and you know, last year we had Ryan Finley, you know, who's the backup in Cincinnati now. We had Garrett Bradbury, who was the, you know, whatever it was, like the 18th pick in the draft, the Vikings, who's starting at center for the Vikings now. We had Jermaine Pratt, who's playing a lot for the Cincinnati Bengals. So we had some Wolfpack guys. So on the team this year, it's, you know, we've got Murchison, the defensive tackle, who's coming off like a 3.5 sack game last week against Florida State. And then James Smith Williams, the defensive end, who I tweeted out today, like the metamorphosis of this kid from when he got there as a 197-pound, 196-pound freshman to like a 270-pound, you know, senior has been remarkable.
Wow.
And, you know, he's going to be a freakish tester in the spring. So, like, that's the hard part, you know, for the Senior Bowl is that we really, my predecessor, Phil Savage, warned me about that. He's like, you know, your draft is in late November. You know, you don't get to go through the entire month of April and, you know, go through pro days and combine and see how they tested, know their medicals. And, you know, like you got a draft in late November. It's not easy. And part of it is knowing which guys are going to test really well. And we know James is going to be like a 40-inch vertical guy. And he's going to run in the 4.5s at 265 pounds. So he's a guy that we really want to get a close look at.
Sure.
Yeah, sticking to that social media theme there, I mean, again, you guys do a great job with posting the videos. But I think what you also do is you give fans who might not be familiar with some of these names, some of these prospects when they're drafted, an opportunity, you know, firsthand to see them and kind of kind of recollect that name. So having, you know, put that in mind, is there a small school guy, a small school player that you guys have seen that our listeners should keep an eye on?
I tallied it up the other day and I posted, we've already posted 220 some players. And again, it's not, I've gotten feedback from agents over the last year that, you know, the players, when they see their videos posted, they get a real sense that they're, you know, Senior Bowl prospects and draftable prospects and everything like that. So I've tried to be really, really cognizant of not trying to, you know, pump some of these college guys up to think that they're something they're not, because that's really, when you're an NFL scout, it's a real problem, right? So, you know, parents and families and agents, they're filling these kids with a lot of false hope. And yeah, we don't want to do that at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, of the 220 guys we posted, they're all legit players. They're all guys that are going to be drafted or priority free agents. They're all going to be somewhere. We're not just posting guys to post guys, because I do not believe in that. I hate the fact that it's one of the worst parts of the process, is the players get a false sense of where they're going to go, and they think they're going to go in the third round. They go undrafted. Like, that stuff stinks on draft day. Like, you know, talking to those guys on draft weekend when they have these expectations, we're not trying to do that. So all the guys we posted are legit. In the small school guys, like, you know, at the top of my mind, the biggest one is probably Kyle Duggar at Lenoir Ryan, is a Division II kid. He might be the best small school prospect in the country, like even better than any FCS guy. You know, he's 6'2", he's 222 pounds. He ran 4.41 for scouts in the spring. The combine scout that timed him was a guy I worked with in Seattle, and he timed him multiple times in the 4.4. So he's a legit speed guy. He's a great returner. You know, he flies around. He's one of those guys that, like, when he gets the ball in his hand, on returns or is it on an interception, like, guys at that level don't want to tackle him. So I think he's got like 6 touchdowns already this year. The scouts want to see him. They got to see him. Like, I've talked to a lot of scouts at games over the course of the fall, and they're like, you have to bring him to Mobile, because we do not know how to evaluate this kid off Division II tape, because he's man amongst boys. So I would say right now, small school wise, it's probably Kyle.
That's awesome. That's a name to definitely write down. Kind of switching gears to the position groups, and tonight I'm giving my preseason top 10 interior defensive linemen, and one guy I've been struggling with, and I know scouts like him, and I know why, because he flashes, but I just need your help here, Jim. Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. I see the size, I see the flash, I see the pop in his arms, I see the athletic ability. But then I also see the you know, the loafing in defense. I see the some of the stiffness in his lower body. I see, help me here. What is it about Kinlaw that a lot of these NFL scouts are raving about?
Yeah, I think he's a man child. I think he's an absolute man child. I think that those guys don't grow on trees. Javon Kinlaw doesn't grow on trees. So some of the loafs, I mean, maybe you're seeing that off junior tape. I saw him play a couple weeks ago against Alabama. I didn't see that at all. He's playing at a really high level. I was talking to a South Carolina coach this afternoon. They're really happy with where he's at. You know, he's one of those guys that, he probably could have come out last year. Probably wouldn't have been a great decision, but, you know, a lot of guys don't make great decisions. You know, there's 50 guys that came out last year that didn't get drafted as juniors. Mm-hmm. But he would have been drafted in probably the third or fourth round last year. And he had a child in the offseason, and that's always another one of those things that can take a guy in one direction or the other. It can distract him and take him away from football, or it can, like, really focus and get him honed in. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's done for Javon. Like, he's on a mission right now. He's playing really hard. He's long. He's explosive. He has not played a lot of football. He's still trying to figure it out. So if you're an NFL team, like, that's what you get excited about. Like, the upside of this kid, when he figures it out, it's going to be kind of scary, because when he gets those arms extended and he comes off the ball, like, you just can't block guys like him. So, and he's running on the football this year. So to me, the interior three guys are Derek Brown, Raekwon Davis, and Javon Kinlaw. And then there's like a shelf. Then it's like, there's a drop off. So those three guys all are Pro Bowl level players at the next level if they hit their ceiling, but they're all really high ceiling players.
We've got a question for you in the chat, Jim, in regards to Notre Dame guard Tommy Kramer and your thoughts on him.
Yeah, Tommy's a redshirt junior. Notre Dame is one of those weird schools. Stanford's one of those schools that way, too. They list their guys as seniors, but they're technically not seniors on the field.
Okay.
So he is a guy that he'll have his diploma in December. He's Senior Bowl eligible. So we've started to look at him a little bit, but not a guy I want to comment on because he's got another year to play at Notre Dame.
Gotcha.
No, I'm just saying my last one was more of a, not a question, more of a favor or of a plea to Jim. I love the one-on-ones, the goal line one-on-ones. I'm down at the Senior Bowl. I've been down there 4 years in a row, and I try not to miss any of those reps. Can I please have Derrick Brown going up against, I don't care who, but man, that guy one-on-one, those drills, I expect him to demolish guys. I mean, this guy's a man-child. I watch him on tape, and it's just amazing the way he just can, you know, toss bodies around. Guys that are respectable NFL caliber, you know, potential caliber guards, you know, centers, and he's just, you know, throwing them all over the place. So that's the guy I'm definitely looking forward to seeing in those one-on-ones.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. No, Derek's taking his game to a different level, for sure. He was smart to stay in last year. There was definitely things he needed to clean up in his game. He's an excellent player. He's a great prospect. Got to meet him at the SEC Media Days. I know his coach, Rodney Gardner, very well. Rodney does an awesome job with all those D linemen at Auburn. And he's one of those guys. He's a poster child for why you come back for your senior year, because he looks like a different guy this year. He's been a really good player at Auburn for the last couple of years, but take the Texas A&M game. He was unblockable. So I actually got a little pissed tonight. I was driving home from work, and I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweeted out something about, you know, it only took him one game to realize that Derrick Brown's a freak and all that. And I texted him like, stop that. I'm like, you're making my recruiting of Derrick Brown really, really difficult right now. Stop tweeting that stuff out. That's the hard part of my job right now is that, you know, there's so much talk on social media and whatnot about the draft, and it's great. That's great that everyone loves the draft, but coming from a respected voice like Daniel, I'm like, dude, stop that stuff, because there's no way this kid's coming to Mobile if Daniel Jeremiah is calling him a freak. So just like slow your roll a little bit, will you? but no, I think that you know what we do have to sell to these guys, you know, because it's not just like. Kids aren't just coming to the Senior Bowl, you know, like you got to give them like a reason why to come and why they can help themselves.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that he and Raekwon are pretty close. I think that right now it's like on Twitter, if you listened, it's like, you know, Derek's just like the guy. But I think he and Raekwon are really close. I've seen Raekwon up close a lot in Tuscaloosa over the years. They're really, really similar players and have a lot of the same potential. But I go to guys like Aaron Donald and Von Miller. You know, like Von Miller, I scouted him coming out of Texas A&M. He was going to be a top three pick regardless if he came to Mobile or not. And he's like, you know what? I'm a competitor. I'm going to go down and kick people's ass for a couple of days and show them like what kind of competitor I am. And same thing with Aaron Donald. Like he probably needed Mobile a little more than Von did, because there were some questions about, you know, his height and his length, and he wasn't prototype and all that stuff. But that's going to be my pitch to Derek, is like, you know what, Derek, like everyone knows you're a great player. You're going to go in the first round. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, like come show these guys what kind of competitor you are. You know, like they're going to be putting out a lot of money to draft you, and whoever drafts you is going to want to sign you to a second contract. So, you know, come down here and show them that. And that's always the question on a second contract. Like, how much does this guy really want it? Like, right. Once we pay him the big dollars, is he going to be the same guy? So I think if you come to Mobile and you know you're a first-round pick, and you come to the Senior Bowl, like, you're showing how innately competitive and how much this matters to you. So that's going to be my sell. Whether he buys it or not, we'll see. But, no, he's a great player on tape.
Before we let you go, the last thing that I would like to talk to you about is the charitable work that the Reese's Senior Bowl is doing, and just shedding some light on that. I don't know that a lot of people know that the Senior Bowl is involved in giving back, and and the ways that they do that. I know there's a charity run coming up in less than a month in early November, and there's some flag football events going on as well. You know, how did you guys get involved in all this charitable stuff through the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, you know, it's been such a long-standing game. Again, 71 years down here in Mobile, and that's kind of what makes us different from the other games, is that we've been around for so long in Mobile, Alabama, and the charity aspect of it has been really, I mean, that's really the backbone of what we do down here. And taking, you know, coming into the game a year ago, like, one of my biggest goals was to really touch every level of football, right? So obviously, like, the college scene and the pros, like, that's one thing, but like, I really wanted to affect, like, so we've got the flag league, we've got this NFL Play 60 flag league, which is awesome. It gives families, and you know, that don't want to have their kids play tackle football at a young age, and an alternative. You know, we had an event last year over Thanksgiving. We had a Turkey Bowl event the Sunday before Thanksgiving last year with, like, the local youth tackle leagues that actually, you know, the families that are good with their kids tackling. So we had a big event at Ladd Stadium the last year, and it was awesome. It was so cool. We had, like, the Jumbotron out there, like we do at the game. And
yeah,
we had the PA announcer, and we gave out 400 turkeys to, like, underprivileged families around the area. We had a bunch of our former NFL players from around the area come back. It was a great event. So there's, like, we just want to touch, like, every level, you know, of football in the area. That's really our focus. And the charity run we've been doing for, like, 32 years. So, like, that really wasn't part of, like, my mission is the football part of it.
But sure,
the charity
sure.
run is so great. So we pick a charity every year. You know, and last year was this Aubrey's Army. This young girl, Aubrey, died of a horrific disease. And she was really young girl. And I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and really similar age. So a family down here lost their daughter, and we gave all the charity money to her last year. So if you're not doing that, like, what are we doing this for? Right. So,
right. Absolutely.
I mean, the football part of it's a lot of fun, and obviously we love what we do on the football part of it. But the most rewarding part is to have, like, our former players from the area come back and get them involved in the community and do those things. So I appreciate you guys bringing that up.
Well, we actually do a segment, not only on this show, but also on our original Barfly Tailgate show, called Badge of Honor, that, you know, recognizes charitable work. And, you know, being that we come down to the Senior Bowl, we're kind of hoping to, you know, work with yourself and maybe some of your other scouts on some of the players that are active and involved in their community, and possibly awarding a Badge of Honor to one of the players at the Senior Bowl.
Oh, that'd be cool, man. Yeah, let's definitely get together on that. I would love to do that. And that's the great part of, you know, having a background for so long in the NFL is the thing I really miss about scouting in the league is that I don't go to schools every day. I don't hear about the background of these guys and the stuff they're doing and where they came from. I mean, that's really the good stuff to me, is, like,
sure,
to hear about where the family situations and what the adversity they overcome. So the nice thing is I do have, you know, all my buddies in the league that'll, you know, give me a heads up about, hey, you know, so-and-so at Clemson or, you know, Georgia or whatever, you know, that kid, you should hear what he's doing or where he came from or the story. So, yeah, if we can hook that up some way, that'd be great. I'd love to help you guys that way.
That would be awesome, Jim. And I'm getting some punishment here. I have to ask you this question from the chat.
I am not related.
No.
I'm not related.
No swaggy naggy in your bloodlines there.
Well, that is our passcode for our Wi-Fi in our car. It's swaggy naggy. But
oh, that's awesome.
It's funny, people ask that all the time. It's not a real common name, although it is the most common surname in Hungary. You can ask Matt that. He probably knows that. And it's funny, he's the East Coast guy. My grandfather's from New Jersey. So maybe way back when we are related, I don't know. But we spent like 2 or 3 months together in Kansas City. I was getting blown out the doors with the Scott Pioli regime, and he was getting brought in with the Andy Reid regime. And really good dude. Really good. I mean, Matt was a great guy. Really enjoyed working with him for like those 3 or 4 months. That's kind of the, you know, that's the cool part in the NFL. Like, when there is crossover, you know, like the scouting staff stays on board for through the draft and the new coaching staff comes in. So similar, I had one other experience like that. I was working in Washington with John Schneider and Marty Schottenheimer, and they got let go after 1 year, and they you know, Marty probably shouldn't have won Coach of the Year that year, and Danny Snyder fired him. But that's another story.
Yeah.
And Steve Spurrier came in with his crew of guys and got to know those guys well. So that's some of the cool stuff. So I did get to know Matt a little bit. Really smart guy, obviously. You guys know that.
And, oh, yeah.
Great coach and good dude. And really happy for all the success he's had there in Chicago. You know, when people ask that, I mean, no, not related. I wish I had his bank account, but no, we're not related.
Right.
Before we let Jim Nagy go, he's going to share with us some of the top senior tight ends, and Danny Shimon will later share with us his top 10 defensive tackles. Stick with us.
We had another question in the chat, and it was related to the senior tight end class, and if you've had a chance to look at it, and any names or players that pop out to you.
Yeah, there's a bunch. It's a good class. You know, right at the top, it's probably, you know, kind of in your backyard a little bit. Bryson Hopkins from Purdue's really athletic guy. Really, it's funny. He popped on my radar. I was in the Atlanta airport last spring, and I ran into David Blau, the quarterback from Purdue, just sitting at a gate. You know, we're born a plane to this. And I didn't invite David Blau to the Senior Bowl. I think he was the East West Shrine guy. Great guy. You know, and I asked him, like, who do you guys got next year? And he's like, oh, our tight end's great. So that's the first time I heard of Bryson Hopkins. But he's, you know, really athletic. He's going to be a top tester, really productive in their offense, playmaking guy. You know, like smaller school guys, like one of the names people asked me about, like small school guys, you asked me about guys earlier and I said Kyle Duggar, but another guy is up there in the Midwest, kind of close to you at University of Dayton is Adam Troutman is a tight end at Dayton. And it's really ironic. I'm from Northern Michigan and this kid is like literally from my hometown.
Wow.
Like 5 minutes outside my hometown, but he went to Dayton as a quarterback and he's, you know, he's 6'4", he's 250, and made the transition to tight end before his sophomore year. And, you know, Dayton is, I think it's non-scholarship FCS level. So it's really like, I got a guy in my office that one of our scouting assistants played in the same league at Stetson. And he's like, Jim, it's glorified Division III football because they don't give scholarships. But this kid is, you put on the tape. And again, like small school players, like they have to dominate. They have to dominate that level of comp. They have to look different. You know, like I tell people, like my 10-year-old daughter has to put on that tape and pick out the best guy, you know, and Adam Troutman at Dayton, we had a scout there last week watching him. He had 4 touchdowns in the first half and really crisp route runner, twitchy athlete, catches everything. You put it up to him like in traffic. He's unfazed. He's really tough. So he's a really interesting guy for, you know, that's a really cool thing about the Senior Bowl is you get these guys that are from these, you know, small schools and they can kind of have the breakout deal. So Troutman, Hopkins, Harrison Bryan at FAU is another guy down with Lane Kiffin, really athletic pass catching dude. So it is, I think it's going to be a little better class than last year. I really do. I think it's, nice. I think tight end's a good group this year. And, I don't know if the Bears need one or not. Like I'm so consumed with college right now that I lose track of like NFL depth charts. But
sure,
if you need a tight end right now, it's a good class.
Yes, yes, they do. They do. And Harrison Bryan was a guy I had kind of pegged and as a guy that I was really intrigued by this season as well. So I'm glad you mentioned that name too. So, hey, Jim, man, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for giving us, you know, more than we actually had agreed upon. And you know, we're looking forward to coming down there again in Mobile and seeing you and hopefully doing another interview with you this year as well. So thanks again for spending some time with us tonight. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, fellas, thanks for having me on. It's been fun. I appreciate it. I love Chicago. Met my wife in Chicago, so you know it's my favorite city in America. So I love being out with you guys, and we'll see you in Mobile come January. And listen, to all your listeners, like this is the experience. If you're a football fan, like this beats everything. You know, like you come down here, you guys can attest. You stand 10 feet from drills. You go to the hotel. you can take a selfie with Baker Mayfield or Daniel Jones or Gardner Minshew or like, and then you can walk up and down Dolphin Street, which is like our Bourbon Street, and you duck into a bar, and there's your head coach or your GM having a beer. You have a beer with your head coach or your GM. So we're, I think it's kind of it's something that we need to do a better job of is marketing the fans. You know, like sure. That's one thing I realized in the offseason is that I don't think fans realize like what an awesome week Senior Bowl week is. I was in Nashville with the ESPN crew as part of the draft weekend, and it was in, I didn't realize, but like Nashville is the bachelorette party capital of the world or of the United States.
It's called Nash Vegas and in some places.
Yeah, Nash, there you go. And in Mobile should be such like a guy's weekend destination. Like if you love the NFL and you're a draft guy and you just love the draft process and love the NFL, like this is such a fun week. Like you're like the whole NFL is here. It descends upon a small town. You could literally like plop a chair down at one of the intersections in town and everyone in the NFL is going to walk by you at some point. So, want to get that out to your fans. Like we want to get that out. We want to blow the city out. It's going to be a great party weekend this weekend. We're adding some cool things, like a Mardi Gras party on Friday night. So if you come down on Thursday for practice, stay Friday for the game. It's going to be a hell of a week. So appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, Jim, we'll definitely help you promote that, and we'll definitely do that, and let our fans know too where the best places to follow you on Twitter are, just so they know and they can find any information the Senior Bowl account is putting out as well.
Yeah, our Twitter feed for the Senior Bowl is at Senior Bowl, and then for mine it's at Jim Nagy _SB. That's where all the videos are posting on weekends of the college prospects because. You know, I'm out at games and our scouts are out of games and they send their stuff to me and I post it. So nice. If you want to keep up with all the college prospects, it's at Jim Nagy _SB.
Great. Thank you so much.
Must follows. Must follows for both of these guys.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks. Have a good night. Boy, what a great interview, Danny, having the pleasure of having Jim on with us.
And I can attest to, I've been down there 4 years in a row. Alden and I have been on there for the last 2 or 3 years together, and everything he said, I can attest to 100%. It is a phenomenal weekend if you're a football fan, if you're a college football fan, if you're an NFL fan. You know, if you're someone who gets into the draft process and you like to, hear more or see these guys in play in action and in person. And like I said, you can take a selfie with some of these players and all that stuff. So it literally is that you can hear the popping of the pads. You can see these guys sweating and you can see how they interact with their teammates. It is a phenomenal atmosphere. They do a great job of promoting it and making the fan experience being just excellent. I mean, you literally could be sitting in the stands and there are scouts behind you talking,
Wow.
So, it's that's how it is. So it definitely for all of our listeners, all of our fans, if you guys want to get down there, we're going to be down there. And definitely would like to have everyone, Bears Barroom just take over Mobile.
That would be awesome. I can't wait. I'm going to be there. I'm focusing on it as a Christmas present for crying out loud. I'm telling my parents, everybody.
And I've heard, I've never experienced, but I've heard there's some really good massage parlors down there as well.
It's true.
Oh, no. The Godfather has visited a couple of massage parlors.
But they're illegal, so I'm not trying to say anything.
Oh, boy. Draft on Tap took its first turn.
Become draft wonderproof.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I'm okay with that.
We'll return right after this quick message.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alec Lifshitz, a.k.a. Trey Busy, and I'm here to have a conversation with you guys about mental health. A lot of times in our communities, we don't talk about mental health enough, and it goes under the radar as a reoccurring issue. So I took the liberty to create the Let's Talk It Out podcast. This podcast was created to break the silence on mental health issues and to give a voice to those suffering. I have conversations with professionals in the mental health field as well as those who are suffering, and we break down different ways to stump stigmas and ways to cope with mental health conditions. The show is broadcasted live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. That's mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. if you can't make the live recording of the podcast, then you can find the podcast available to you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Give the podcast a follow on Twitter and Instagram at LTI Podcast on both platforms. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.
We now return to our program.
Danny, we're talking defensive tackles tonight, right?
Yes, sir. We're talking the big guys, the big nasties in the middle of the defensive line. Last week we went over the edge rushers, the defensive ends, the guys that come off the edge flying, you guys who create pressure off the edge, you know, with sacks and all that stuff. Now we're talking about the big guys. The term that the Giants GM Dave Gettleman likes to use is hog molly. These big guys in the middle, that can clog up the lanes, that can generate some pressure, you know, collapse the pocket, and those are the guys we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, and we'll kick things off with Derek Brown from Auburn. Let's hear it, Dan.
I mean, I don't know how much more I can say about this kid.
Right.
For me, this guy is on top of my top 10, and he, for me, is head and shoulders above the rest of the guys. You know, we talked about him. Matt Waldman, last week's guest, and I talked about him extensively. You just heard Jim Nagy talk about him right now. This kid is a man amongst boys. I mean, if you have not seen Derek Brown play, if you haven't seen much of Auburn, you know, football this season, there's only one game, really, maybe two you can put on. Jim mentioned the Texas A&M game. He had two sacks there. He dominated the offensive line. Put on the Oregon game, the first game of the season. You know, a lot of people say that Oregon might have the best offensive line in college football this year. And he just totally dominated them. There's a sequence at a goal line where he literally throws a guard 3 yards back into the backfield. So, I mean, they're trying to double team him and they can't stop him. So, you know, with him, it's his size. It's 6'4", 315 pounds. It's that thick lower half that can generate power, that can, like I said, overwhelm blockers. You know, that play strength to hold his own versus big-bodied offensive linemen. I mean, they literally cannot move him off the spot with double teams. You know, he's not a guy that's going to be you know, like a 10 sack a season guy, you know, so don't think, you know, Aaron Donald, or if, you know, going back into the old days, like a Warren Sapp or anything like that. But he's a guy that can, you know, not only he'll clog up the middle, but he'll generate some pressure, but he'll do it by collapsing the pocket. He will literally walk an offensive lineman back into the quarterback. Mm-hmm. He'll draw double teams, so he'll draw extra blockers. So he's a guy that affects the game. You know, his stats might not tell it all, but he's a guy that affects the game in multiple ways. If you watch last week's game versus Florida, I mean, he had two fumble recoveries, he had a sack, he caused a fumble, and he picked up the ball and he ran 40 some yards for a guy, you know, 6'4", 315 pounds, you know, roughly in that area. I mean, this guy's got some athletic ability in his feet, he's got some quick feet, he's got some lateral agility. The way he maneuvers and goes up and down the line and bypasses some of the trash around the line of scrimmage is very impressive for a guy this size. So again, I don't know there's much more that I can say about him other than this guy is like I said, above and beyond some of the other guys in terms of my defensive tackle ranking. So definitely number one on my board, and I think number one on a lot of team sports going into this draft process.
Yeah, career stat-wise, 125 tackles, 12 sacks, 4 forced fumbles. The guy's, I mean, he's a game wrecker. It is the easiest way to explain him, I think.
Right. I mean, he literally takes up 2-3 guys in the middle of your offensive line to try and block them.
Number two on your list out of Florida State, Marvin Wilson.
Yeah, he's another kid that intrigues me. He's one of two juniors on my list. The thing about Wilson is the size. He's got he's 6'4", 308 pounds. He's got a stocky build with weight that's evenly proportioned throughout his body. You know, he's got solid play strength. He too can generate movement at the line of scrimmage. He can generate power from his lower body. He's got really strong hands. Man, this guy can grapple with blockers. He can control the chest, stack, and toss blockers aside. So that kind of sticks out on tape. I like the way he plays with good balance. He maintains his feet through that trash at the line of scrimmage we were just talking about with Derek Brown as well. So in terms of his ability as a pass rusher, you know, he demonstrates gap penetrating quickness. You know, he uses his hands well to gain leverage, and then he can press a blocker and do a, you know, put on a swim move to get by him. So he's a guy that when I kind of project him, I see him as an interior upfield a rushing defensive tackle. I can see him with that type of potential. So if you think of him in a scheme like, say, the Cowboys or probably Seattle, teams that allow their interior guys to shoot gaps, to get upfield at the snap, I think this is a kid, Marvin Wilson, that can only, you know, produce, probably produce more than what he's done at Florida State currently. I mean, if you look at his numbers, you know, last season he only had 4 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. He's already off to a decent start this year. He's got 4.5 tackles for loss and 3 sacks already. So I think he's a guy, if given opportunity, can probably produce more in the pass rush area. But he's definitely a guy that can you put in the middle of your defensive line and he can create some havoc there.
Yeah, 23 tackles on the season as well. So he's definitely, you know, starting to grow, to say the least. And as we look at number three on your list, Raekwon Williams out of Michigan State.
Yeah, a local kid here. The guy's from Chicago. Last year, he was a first-team All-Big Ten, three-year starter. You know, has started 29 consecutive games, so he's got that durability. He was voted team captain this season, so he's a guy that's got some leadership qualities. The thing about Raekwon Williams is I love the combination of size and strength. Another guy that can generate power at the point of contact, knock back offensive linemen to disrupt running plays. Now, you know, what I mean by that is a lot of times you see with Williams is, you know, he might not be credited for a tackle for a loss or for a sack, but his guy, his guard, his blocker, he's knocked 2-3 yards back into the backfield. You know, on a running play, and the running back now, he's lost the ability to be able to cut off that block. He's lost some of his vision to be able to find the back, you know, a cutback crease. And also he's allowed now, Williams that is, allowed his teammates to rally to the ball and be able to get that tackle for loss. So now, you know, he might not get credited for that play, but he's the one who made that play. So a lot of times when you watch him, you know, you watch him play, you see stuff like that. You know, again, another kid who can stack the point. He's powerful enough to, you know, to collapse the pocket and walk blockers back into the quarterback. Yeah. He's got good movement skills for a big man. He's got athletic feet. Okay. He's got quick hands. I like the way he uses, he develops his swim move. He's got a rip through move where rips through the arms of the blocker and gets penetration that way. He can flip his hips to the gap. He uses his arm length to keep the guards to his side as he wiggles free in the backfield. You know, so stuff like that you catch on tape. And, you know, he's the guy that you know, I've talked about with some of the other positions here is scheme versatility. That, to me, is very high on my list. And this is a kid that I can see playing as an interior defensive tackle in a 4-3 defense. I can also see him playing some nose tackle in the 3-4 and possibly even a 5 technique as a defensive end in a three-man front. So it's a kid that's got the size, the athleticism that I like, the combination, and I think his best football is also, you know, in the future.
Yeah, 134 career tackles, 28.5 tackles for loss, 10 sacks, 3 forced fumbles. I mean, the stats just scream baller. Moving on to Javon Kinlaw, number 4 out of South Carolina, Danny.
Yeah, this is a kid I just talked about it with Jim Nagy, and Nagy's right, and his description was perfect. He's a man child, right? I mean, when you put on his tape, and I've been up and down on him. I know for a fact scouts like him, and I have dug into some of his 2019 tape, but I've been predominantly looking at his 2018 tape, so I'll dig into some more of his 2019 tape here. But the thing that jumps out at you about Kinlaw, you know, he's 6'5", 305 pounds. He's a big-bodied interior defensive lineman. He's actually a kid who transferred to South Carolina. He came from a junior college and lost 40 pounds. So, you know, he was much bigger than he is right now. So he's a guy that's got solid play strength. He can uncoil those hips. You know, another guy who can rock blockers backwards. He can collapse. He's a collapse the pocket type of pass rusher, similar to some of the guys we've talked about. A guy who can extend his arms and get, you know, get into the backfield, not by looking pretty per se, but more so by brute strength and power. Does a nice job of using that language you talked about, using that length, his size, his ability to use his hands to get offensive linemen on their heels. He's got a nice swipe move. He's got a club move that he uses to get past offensive linemen. So he's got long arms. You know, he's got the ability where he just puts his arms up in the air and he can knock down a ball. So that he's got, I think, 8 passes defense over his career. So he's a kid that if he's not going to get there, he can at least put his arms up in the air and he can, you know, make an impact on the game or on that play. You know, by knocking the ball down. So another kid that scheme versatility, you're going to hear this a lot. You know, a guy who can line up interior as a defensive tackle. He can line up as a 5 technique defensive end in a 3-4 scheme. So another guy that I know scouts are high on. And it's just for me, I can see him pop. I see him flash on tape, and I know what they like, and I can see why they like him so much. But then I see the balance issues. I see him on the ground a lot. You know, I see some hip stiffness. I, You know, I saw him again against Clemson where he got just balled off the spot. I mean, he wasn't, there was like no resistance whatsoever. So it's things like that that I want to see him clean up, and hopefully he does that. And if he does, I think that size, that ability, you know, combination, and you know, I think he's a kid that, like I said earlier, I know scouts like him. So we'll just,
sure,
just see how he ends up finishing off the season and where he ends up in terms of the whole draft process.
And you talk about his hips, Danny. That's a flexibility thing, right? With proper trainer and so on and so forth, he gets to that next level. That's something that can be improved on, correct?
I haven't seen it get – when I say hip stiffness or lower body stiffness, it's predominantly obvious and when you ask him to change directions quickly.
Okay.
So if a running back makes a move on him and he changes direction, can he kind of, you know, turn and run with the flow of the play, you know, or is he just stuck in mud kind of thing, you know? So
yep.
So there's times where you know, when he's playing, they call it playing in a booth, when he's in a secured area, you know, Kinlaw can dominate. But there's times when you get him on, and you know, if they're pulling and they're running away from him, you know, he kind of lumbers and it doesn't have that ability to kind of change directions quick enough. So that's where I kind of mark him down for some stiffness in his lower body.
Okay. Number five on your list, McTelvin Ajim out of Arkansas, 108 tackles in his career, 22 tackles for loss, 10 sacks. What do you like about McTelvin?
This is a kid that really intrigued me. He's played 37 games with 28 starts. Okay, he started both at defensive end and defensive tackle. This is a former five-star prospect out of high school. He chose Arkansas over, get this, Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Texas. I mean, the who's who,
wow,
of college football. All these programs came after him and recruited him, and he ended up choosing Arkansas. He's a kid that last year thought about coming out in the draft and you know, and put his name in, and got a third to fifth round range grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Board. And they told him that the NFL scouts and NFL teams see him more as a defensive tackle. And again, at Arkansas, he's being flipped back between defensive end and defensive tackle. So he came back with the promise from his coaching staff that he was going to play strictly defensive tackle. And so far, he's been off to a great start. He's got three sacks already. In terms of size, he's got average size. I like my interior lineman a little bit more bigger, but he's about 6'2", 295 pounds. But he's got solid foot quickness. He's got change of direction ability, things we're just talking about with Kinlaw that I didn't see. I see with this kid, he's got good play strength. He can also move blockers backwards or knock them completely off their feet. He possesses a strong lower body. This kid has got a good initial quickness. He's got that short area burst. He can be disruptive, slicing gaps and playing in the backfield. He comes off the ball low with a natural leverage, which I like seeing in my interior defensive lineman. He's got active hands. You know, he demonstrates, you know, savviness as a pass rusher with a rip, swim, swipe. So, you know, this is a kid that definitely will put all out hustle and effort on the field. You know, you can see him chasing, you know, plays down from the perimeter, going from the hash mark to the perimeter or even on the backside, you know, of a run plays too. So he's a kid that really intrigues me. I think he's more made for an interior 4-3, kind of a three technique possibly, because he's got that quickness. He's got the ability to get off the snap. So I see him more of it as a 4-3 defensive tackle, but definitely a kid that really does intrigue me a lot.
Justin Matabuke out of Texas A&M is number six on your list, Danny. You know, what draws your attention to Justin?
Another junior. It's only the second junior on my list, and only a 1-year starter. So another kid that's got average size, about 6'2", 300 pounds. But he possesses that solid play strength that I've been talking about. You know, he's got the ability to clog up the middle. Mm-hmm. He demonstrates a disruptive ability as both a run defender and an interior pass rusher. I like the way he bends his knees and he plays with leverage. He's quick to locate, right? That tells me that he's got that mental processing ability to be able to read his keys and diagnose and quickly, after the snap, you know, react to what the offense is doing. He can stack and shed at the line of scrimmage. He can wrap up ball carriers, active hands. This kid can slap, rip, and swim with the best of them. You know, as a rusher, I've seen him work that half man move, you know, get skinny enough to penetrate the gap and then close in with some steam on the quarterback. So definitely a guy that shows some of that promise. Again, some of the negatives I've jotted down, is only a 1-year starter, so I like to see more. This year it'll be his second year. Average height. So, he's about 6'2", like I said, and he can be overpowered at times. At the point of contact with, you know, with bigger, longer, you know, longer bodied blockers. So some of that get off, I'd like to see him probably improve on just to get free from those bigger body blockers. But I mean, everything else is pretty impressive with this kid too.
Number seven. Let me talk about Justin Madubuike's career stats: 75 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles. And then moving on to number seven, Raekwon Davis from, I mean, here's another Alabama player, Danny. They show up somewhere on every list.
Yeah, and this is another kid that Jim just talked about. And he's a guy that, coming off his sophomore season in 2017, I expected him to be top of the draft, top of material here. But, you know, that sophomore season, he had, I think, 69 tackles, 10 tackles for a loss. You know, and led the team with 8.5 sacks, with a first team all SEC selection by the coaches. However, things haven't gone that way, you know, the following seasons. Now, some of it might be the way he's being utilized and being asked to do. Like, he does a lot of two gapping at Alabama. He's not really asked to do a lot of, you know, upfield penetration. And in terms of, you know, maybe, you know, occupying blockers and allowing the guys around him to make plays. So that could be some of what has ailed his stats, and to see some of that dip in production. But
sure,
I mean, what you cannot deny is the kid's, you know, body of work. And in terms of, you know, his very, you know, very good size, about 6'6", 308 pounds, very good athlete. He shows that short area straight line burst. It does a nice job of turning his shoulders and getting skinny to get inside leverage on an offensive lineman. Solid play strength, has the ability to, has what I call take on strength. He can, you know, take on multiple blockers and absorb them and maintain his ground. He can stack and shed. When this kid plays long and he extends his arms, this guy can control the blocker's chest. He can, you know, throw him to the side, push him back, knock him down. So he's got that ability. You know, he flashes that ability. I just wanted to see more consistency. You know, he kind of teased us with that sophomore campaign. I just wanted [S2] Right. [S1] To see more of that. And that's really why he's really been knocked down here. Now, if he's going to come into the league and be, you know, a dominant run stuffer and be a, you know, a five technique and be one of the best run stuffers, great. But I think there's more there. I've seen more out of him, and I just kind of wanted to see it on a more consistent basis. That's why, you know, he's a little bit lower on my list. But again, another kid just like Kinlaw we talked about earlier. I know scouts like him. We just heard Jim Nagy talk about it. You know, he thinks he's one of the top three defensive tackles in this entire class. So he's a kid that, you know, it wouldn't shock me if he gets, you know, goes higher than I have him ranked here. It just, for me, I wanted to see more, and hopefully, you know, we'll see that as the season goes on.
And you know, Danny, I mean, we've seen it in the draft, you know, not year over year per se, but you always see a team kind of reach for a guy they want. And, you know, there's no reason that couldn't happen in this draft with Raekwon Davis. I mean, if he's a big disruptor, you may, you know, or teams think he can be with what they're looking for, you could see that happen.
Right. He's, like I said, the you know, prerequisites in terms of size, strength, you know, athletic ability, it's there. You know, he's put some on tape. It's just that consistency is what you want to see with him. Now, again, a lot of this could be what he's asked to do. You know, it could be just some of the scheme-wise, what he's been coached to do. So I'm sure there's going to be teams that fall in love with him because of that body. Yeah. And because of what he did in 2017. So, like I said, I would not shock me at all if he ended up going way higher than what I have him listed here.
Well, and you look at the accolades, the preseason accolades for him: preseason All-American by four separate outlets, a second team preseason All-American, the Sporting News named the Bednarik Award, and the Nagurski Trophy watch list. So, you know, clearly he's a name people know. Moving on, number eight on your list is Leaky Fotu out of Utah.
Yeah, Leaky Fotu is a guy, his physicality just jumps out on you on tape. I mean, I'm sure opposing offensive linemen, they feel the after effects of playing Fotu, you know, the day after these games. But a former rugby player, okay, when he was younger, is very good size. He's at 6'4", 330 pounds. athletic, you know, and he's a guy that carries his weight well. You, if you look at him, you don't think this guy's, you know, 230 pounds, but he's got very good play strength. He can plant blockers in the backfield and reestablish the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. He can be a very good run defender. He's, you know, he's flashed the ability to steer, control, and ragdoll blockers using that play strength and those strong hands of his. You know, he draws attention. This is a kid that's seldom blocked one-on-one. So he's not the guy that's going to draw multiple blockers. You know, a strong tackler with that knockback power. And I tweeted a video of him. You know, he did a nice move off the line of scrimmage, you know, got up, penetrated, shot the gap. Mm-hmm. And he hit the USC running back so hard that the ball popped out and went like 5 yards, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. So then, and then caused a bump. So he's got that knockback power.
Sure.
You know, another kid that, you know, scheme versatility. This guy can play, you know, in a 4-3 front. He can play a 5 technique in a 3-4. So another kid that's got power, has got size, and has got that versatility that I think a lot of teams are going to like about him. And he's another guy that, by the way, what we talk about with Jim about Derrick Brown lining up on those goal lines, he's another guy that I'm looking forward to in those one-on-one blocking, pass rusher drills down at the Senior Bowl. So if you guys want to see some popping, you want to see some bodies flying, you come on down to that Senior Bowl and you'll see this kid. Hopefully he's down there and along with Derrick Brown. But
yeah,
definitely a kid that to keep an eye on.
Yeah, 65 tackles throughout his career, 12 and a half tackles for loss, 2 forced fumbles, and definitely hitting on that top 10 list of yours, Danny. Number 9 is Benito Jones from Ole Miss. I said his name right, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Sheesh, I made my font bigger because, and I still can't read it.
You're getting old, my friend.
Oh, my gosh. It's awful.
Benito Jones, yeah, this is a kid that from Ole Miss. I don't know if a lot of people know about him or not. Ole Miss, you know, isn't really known as having a great program. They're a solid program, but not. But he's a guy, you know, has played 42 games in his career, 122 tackles, 28 and a half tackles for loss, 8 sacks, a 3-year starter. The thing about this kid, his size is average, maybe even slightly below average. He's about 6'1". But he's built like a tank. He's got a thick 326-pound frame with athleticism, and which is what really catches my eye. He's got solid initial quickness off that snap. You know, he displays that athletic ability in his lower body, you know, for someone who's 320-plus pounds. He plays with solid hip snap to shoot those gaps and disrupt the backfield. You know, plays with that play strength to press and power blockers into the backfield. He can be a disruptive force as a run defender, you know, with his ability to take on blockers. I mean, pretty much this guy can literally clog the middle. You know, as a pass rusher, you know, he can flash. You know, he's not a guy, again, not a guy that's going to produce, you know, 10 to 20, you know, 10 to 15 sacks or anything like that, but he's a guy that can flash. He's got good hand usage. I like the way he uses his arm over to get past blockers. When you couple that with that solid athletic ability, along with the ability to redirect well for a guy that size, And for a guy, you know, and he plays hard. You know, this is a guy that will flatten down on that scrimmage. He will chase down in pursuit. He's just a guy that I think he might not be a fit for every team. Like I said, that size, that height might not be might pigeonhole him into more of a nose guard in a 3-4 system. So he might not be a day one or day two guy, but he definitely is a guy that will make a rotation. And you know, a couple years down the road, you're like, man, Benito Jones, where did this team draft him? You know, which round? He could be one of those guys that you could like, oh, man, this guy's a steal.
Yeah, 2019 preseason All-SEC second team, preseason All-SEC third team, and a 2019 preseason All-SEC fourth team. So he's got a couple of nice accolades there. Rounding out your top 10, I love the first name of this gentleman, Khalil Davis, from Nebraska, 78 career tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 8 sacks throughout his career. What do you like about Khalil, Danny?
Yeah, this is another kid that another bowling ball, about 6'1", 310 pounds. But this is a kid that's chock full of athletic ability. You know, a thick, powerful frame. He's a more quicker than fast player, and he's actually a very good athlete. He was actually an NCAA track and field honorable mention All-American and as a discus thrower. Okay, so you know, he placed 6th at the Big Ten Outdoor Championship. So he's a guy that's a 1-year starter. But when you watch him, he's got that athletic ability, the quick feet, the lateral agility, and a guy with short area quickness. For a guy for 300-plus pounds, his short area quickness is very impressive. Again, good athlete first position. He plays with balance. He plays with quick moving skills. He can avoid cut blocks, which is something you don't see a lot with some of these bigger bodied defensive linemen. He's got good eyes and instincts. He can locate quickly, and he can knife through the backfield. I like the way he flattens down line of scrimmage in the backside pursuit. He's a kid that shows his motor and hustle in pursuit and will chase down ball carriers all over the field. So, you know, he's a guy, even though he's 310 pounds, he's not out there loafing. Last year we saw a guy named Colin Saunders in a smaller school kid at the Senior Bowl. He's not that athletic. The size will kind of again pigeonhole him into where you want him in terms of what kind of defensive front you want him in. I could see him playing some nose guard in a three man front. I could see him playing some three technique in a four man front. There are some things off the field you kind of. He was suspended, I think, versus Northwestern for striking a player in the Ohio State game. He's got some things to maybe he's got a little bit of a temperament. Who knows? But he's a guy that definitely once you put on it. I mean, you never go to Nebraska to look for defensive players nowadays, right? Especially now with Scott Foster, you look for offensive talent. But you know, watching some of his teammates, I put this guy on last year. I'm like, man, this guy's got some intrigue to him. So. Definitely a kid that I like to keep an eye on. He's gone off to a solid start. He's already got three sacks, and that's already having missed one game. So, it's a kid to keep an eye on. It's a guy that I think, again, scheme versatility. Is he a three technique? In a four man front, is he a nose guard? But what he is a powerful kid who's got some quickness.
Yeah, Danny, a great top 10 here for defensive tackles. And, we have a question in the chat that's more Bears related for you. But the question is, what's the Bears scheme? What does the Bears scheme require from a defensive tackle or a nose guard?
Well, just like Eddie Goldman, he's a guy that pretty much takes on blockers. He's a guy that is... a great player that goes unnoticed, if you will. He's a guy that takes on blockers. He allows the linebackers like Trevathan and Roquan Smith and Kwiatkowski when he's in there to flow to the football unimpeded. So what it means is he'll take up multiple blockers, and that gives those linebackers a lane, an angle to the running back or to the football. So that's what they really look for. In terms of their nose tackle, and in terms of their ends, we're looking at Akeem Hicks and Roy Robertson Harrison. And those guys give you length, give you size. Obviously, the main thing with all three of these guys is you got to be able to maintain your ground and defend the run. If you can't, we saw this past week. If you can't stop the run, there's no pass rush, and any offense can pretty much beat you. So so what's the thing is those three guys have to be able to maintain the ground. Be able to maintain their blocks and then also take on double teams and stuff the run. Once you've done that, then you get that little carrot in front of you, and now you can go ahead and pin your ears back and start rushing the passer. A kid like Robertson Harrison, I think this year has really shown his ability to that he's developed as a pass rusher. I think Akeem Hicks last couple of years has shown his ability as a pass rusher as well. But for specifically for those guys for the Bears, whether you're the ends or you're the nose tackle, the first thing is maintain your ground, take on blockers, and stop the run. That's your first priority. And then after that, you're allowed to rush the passer.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, obviously Akeem Hicks, the dislocated elbow, where the defense goes. Hopefully Bilal Nichols comes back this week. But defensive line, I think, for the Bears here for over the next couple weeks is going to be a tough spot for them. Right. You mentioned Roy Robertson Harris really improving.
He's in the last year of his contract, I believe. I think we'll have to refer to our barroom capologist, the smartest man, Shane Marsa. He's a cap guru, right? But I think Roy Robertson Harris is in his last year of his contract.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So moving on, Danny, to college news. We talk a little bit throughout the week, and first thing I want to bring up to you is the Heisman Watch. So thank ESPN.com for this. And you look at their top six, and number one on that board right now is Jalen Hurts. Not surprised at all. What's your take on it?
I am a little surprised. I mean, I know he's having a renaissance, if you will, right? I mean, I know he's just playing well with Oklahoma and they're on that Lincoln Riley system. And I, like we talked about with Jim Nagy, I think he's definitely, most definitely improved his chances of being drafted and being possibly a kid that gets a shot at the next level. But I mean, to me, it's gotta be, you know, it's gotta be like Tua right now. My favorite is the guy who never gets any praise is Sam Ehlinger. And you know, we've talked about this kid, Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin. I mean, to me, those are the guys that are making the big impact, but you know, I see why the media likes to keep putting Jalen Hurts out there, his name up there. But and you know, if that's the case, I don't see the hype stopping anytime soon, because I don't see anybody, you know, stopping that Oklahoma offense, and I don't see anybody, you know, I continue seeing Hurts. I can continue seeing Hurts put up those numbers. So this might be a thing that comes down to the wire though. But I think some of the early favorites that put down there, like Trevor Lawrence and guys like that, are kind of gone by the wayside because of some of the struggles he's had. I think this is right now it's a Tua Tagovailoa award to lose, basically.
Yeah, it's him, it's Hurts, it's Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, who's, you know, fastly moving up everybody's radar, Jonathan Taylor, Justin Fields, and then Sam Ehlinger. So he's in that top six, Danny.
I'm telling you, and this is a big week for him. You know, this game against Oklahoma, the Red River Challenge. If he can show up here, I mean, this is really going to boost his ability or chances, I should say, to possibly corralling that Heisman Trophy at the end of the season.
Yeah, and speaking of big games this week, you just mentioned it, Oklahoma versus Texas. You know, that's definitely one of the top games this weekend. You look at this weekend, Danny, you know, you've got, obviously, we just said it, Oklahoma, Texas. Then you've got Florida at LSU, another one. What are some other games that stand out to you this weekend?
Those are the top ones right there that I'm going to be watching intently. In terms of anything locally here, Michigan State at Wisconsin is going to be a good one. I think that might be a more of a defensive struggle. Notre Dame versus USC should be a relatively, you know, decent matchup. I expect Notre Dame to win that game handily. So we'll see what happens there. But you know, in terms of what I'm looking forward to, it's LSU and Florida with a ton of NFL talent on both sides. And then Texas and Oklahoma is another game that I'm really anticipating. So this is going to be a great weekend for college football.
The other matchup, Danny, I don't like to say that was not for scouting purposes, but Penn State and Iowa, I thought that's the Saturday night game, I believe, on ABC, I thought would be a good one as well.
Yeah, that's got potentially, you know, NFL offensive linemen going up against potentially NFL defensive linemen as well. So definitely like to see. But in terms of like, you know, big name kind of thing, I think LSU, Florida and Oklahoma, Texas are going to be the two games that draw up the most attention.
Well, the game I was hoping about watching tonight.
How's your Orange Men doing?
Oh, good God. It's 13-0 in the third quarter. They're losing. And now, NC State almost just scored a touchdown, so they didn't.
It's only a two-score game. Come on, don't give up. Don't give up faith
the,
like that.
The offense has done nothing. I don't even know if they have a first down.
Wow.
It's just difficult to watch. But the last news story I want to talk to you about, Danny, this one a little strange. So Jonathan Sutherland, Penn State defensive back, received a letter from an alumnus and fan in regards to cutting off his dreadlocks. Very strange to me. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I know NFL players get fan mail. I'm sure college players do as well. But why do you care to the guy writing this letter? The kid's here to play football and get an education. That's what he's doing. Why does it matter?
Right. And then the funny thing is, when you read the story, they actually tracked the guy down because the Penn State players posted on social media that the guy actually, you know, put his name on to the letter, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, I mean, the guy sounds like he's racist. He comes off as he's racist, but he claims he's not, that he's just saying it because he wants the way the old Penn State players were, nice, clean cut, and everything looking all nice and dapper. And I'm like, majority of all Penn State players were white. So if you're trying not to come off as a racist, you're not doing a very good job of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a ludicrous to take time to write a letter, send it to a college kid because you don't like the way his dreadlocks look or they're too long or whatnot. I mean, it's a racist act, but you know, it's like you can't really, I guess the guy says he's not being racist, but that's how I took it. That's how I interpreted it. And I think that's how the players interpreted it as well. So, it's just a bizarre story. Like you said, something I would never have thought someone would take a time out of their, his or her life to write a letter to a college student and telling him to cut his hair, you know? So it's like, it's just a weird story all around. The fact that the guy signed his name in the letter, they actually tracked them down and interviewed this guy. It was even more funnier, but this is a bizarre story. It makes no sense, but hey, I guess nowadays if you feel like you have something to say, you can tweet it out or you can go write a letter and just send it to people. So
yeah, I just it's 2019. I mean, this just needs to stop. I'm not a political person, but the fact that any of this is still going on is just
ridiculous.
Absolutely asinine. And mm-hmm. It's just unfortunate that so much bad stuff happens nowadays that there's still somebody out there that thought this was a good idea to do. It's just unfortunate.
And it's like, I don't know all the players on Penn State, but is there a white kid with long hair? Does he have a mullet? Is that okay?
Right,
is that
yeah.
okay for him? Is it the kid because he has dreadlocks?
Sure.
It's not okay. So, and again, I don't know the whole team, and I don't know in terms of what everyone's hairstyle is, but just a ridiculous story. I mean, like I said, in this day and age, to still have this out there, it's just, and then what kind of even bothers me more is the guy got publicity after it. Now it's probably bad publicity, albeit, but still he got his name out there and people. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. Again, I'm saying, but it's just like people like this shouldn't be given, the time of day. And then the fact that it got out there and then he got some notoriety after it, it's like, dude, I don't want to hear from you. Go away.
Right? Yeah. Like just, oh God, it's just unfortunate that, people still have to deal with stuff like this. And then to report on it, to get, that's the thing with the media, to give the guy attention. That's the thing, I mean, yes, we're doing it here too. So we're just as guilty of it. I mean, we're not saying his name, but it just shouldn't even be brought up and talked about. I know Jonathan Sutherland posted the letter on Twitter. So, I mean, he did put it out there for everybody to see, but.
Right. And the kids, from what I can tell, the kid's a really good kid. He's honor roll kid and all that stuff. So he's, and the coach came out, James Franklin came out and vehemently defended him, his character and all that stuff. And it's, like I said, ridiculous story. Not even sure why this guy even decided to write a letter, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, Danny, what a great show tonight. Really stepping up with a great list of defensive tackles. We want to thank our guest, the Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy, for stopping by. Thank you to everyone who listened live and joined us in the Mixler chat. We hope you enjoyed this week's show. If you can't join us live each week, you can find the podcast version of Draft on Tap shortly after the show is over. And if you're already in bed, you can find it the next morning. Thank you to Eldo Gandia for holding down the fort for us tonight as well with his great work. And we also want to give a big shout out to the voice of the Barroom, Dan Aguirre, and everyone at Bears Barroom who continues to make the network as spectacular as it is. Join us next week for another episode of Draft on Tap. Good night, everybody.
Hey, Barflies, it's Aldo Gandia, and yes, I love the idea of us getting together down at Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. The game is on January 25th, so start planning now. We'll talk about it more often on Draft on Tap, on this show, and then on social media, on Twitter. Let's do a hashtag, Barflies Senior Bowl, so that way you can find any information we're sharing via social media. Let's get down there and have a great time.